welcome back to ScoreNotes.com Composer Interviews. We're here today with John Powell. John, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Great. Now, what can you tell us about your most recent project, the music for Happy Feet?
Oh, where to begin? 4 years in the making, and that's just my part of it. We just finished it not long ago in Australia, and I finally got to see the movie the other day at a screening, and it's just a lot of work for a composer, and it's very rare for a composer to be brought on that early and involved, but it's kind of a musical, or as George calls it, an accidental musical.
Wow, 4 years is almost a labor of love.
Yeah, I kind of called it my hobby film.
Now, you produce some of the songs in the feature as well?
Most of the music is produced by me, except for there's a couple of needle drops. There's three or four needle drops in it, and that's all. Everything else is I had to wrangle, in some way or other.
Now, do you find it's challenging to find a balance between song and score in a project such as this?
Well, it's a unique project in the sense that the actual, the natural behavior of penguins, emperor penguins in the wild and how they mate was the inspiration for why we used songs. So the idea being that every penguin squawks a certain unique squawk, and if you like another penguin's squawk and they like yours, you mate. So we just took that idea, and the conceit is that instead of squawks, they're, you know, unique, iconic songs from the 20th century. So that just meant that the whole idea is that everybody has a heart song, and you find that heart song, and, you know, main character tries to find his heart song at the beginning of the movie, and he's in a society of singers. Everyone sings, except he can't, but he tap dances, and to this society it's a very alien and unusual way of expressing your heart song. In fact, so much so that he becomes an outcast.
Now, it must seem like you must have had your fair share of creative freedom on something like this.
Well, yes, yeah, so it was a long process of trying to find the right songs and trying to find the right way to do them. I mean, we tried a lot of experiments over the 4 years, and that's what made it very interesting to try and find. And hopefully when you watch the film, it feels very smooth and easy. But talking with Baz Luhrmann the other day, the reason that nobody does musicals these days is they are very, very hard. They're much harder to make a piece of music with lyrics and in song form actually push forward a purpose within a film. Actually, it's very hard to do, and to not get people to pop right out of the drama and the storytelling.
Yeah, it seems like there's quite a many variables involved and where things could go wrong as far as taking you out of the story loop.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially when people have such, biases and preferences in music, what you don't want is you're trying to be universal, and that's very hard in music, actually. People really like the kind of music that they like, and they take dislikes to music for their own particular reason.
Looking back at some of your work from earlier in the year, how satisfied are you with how the third installment of X-Men turned out?
Satisfied? I thought it worked out very well. I mean, I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I was coming right off the back of Ice Age. I probably would have had a little bit more time if I could have, but, you know, we had a date to hit, and, there was a lot of work to do, a lot of music. I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed the people I was working with, and I've always liked the X-Men movies. I've liked what Bryan Singer has done, in the past, and I like what the composers had done in the past. So it was really just picking up from where it had been left and making sure that everything was in the same family, but obviously, I did it in my own particular way, I suppose.
Yeah, now, I love the original identity you gave the music, but it still felt very much familiar.
Yeah, it wouldn't have made sense to sort of try and reinvent the wheel on this. It's a very successful, series of films for very good reasons. So, I mean, very good storytelling in the first two as well. And the music was always very supportive of that storytelling, and that was, I had to make sure that the music was as serious as it was in the first two films. I think one of the dangers with this genre of movie is that the music can be a little flippant, or could be tongue-in-cheek, so easy to do, and it's a disaster for the film. So that was my greatest challenge, was to make sure that I sounded deadly serious all the time.
Now, did you have to do a bit of research with the previous two scores? And if so, I imagine it was a little challenging because you're dealing with two works from two different composers.
Well, yes, I certainly have seen the film, the first two films. familiar with them and familiar with the scores, you know, I knew the language I had to speak in. Really, I couldn't sort of be too far outside that language. It was a very, you know, a very serious, very classical language, and you know, we perhaps used more voices in this version than the other two. But I mean, I wasn't I didn't study the first two because I didn't want to give myself too much of a bias as to how it was done in the first two. But I definitely knew I had to be in the same field.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of your fans really, really enjoyed the scope and scale of this effort as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of films in the past where the nature of the film and the nature of the filmmaker is that we've been making it very tight and small and, you know, personal, and the idea being to sort of get under your skin a little bit more in a lot of films I've done, on the action films and things like that. And so to get the chance to be very grand and operatic, mm-hmm. was a pleasure for me. And it's not that I don't do it because I don't want to do it. It's because that was right for this film, and it would be wrong for many, you know, all of the other films I've done so far. So it's one of those things that you write the music that you need to write, and sometimes people really enjoy that music and wonder why you can't write more of it. And the question is whether or not I will get to work on another film that would allow me to do that. In other words, if the film was correct, the film spoke of that language, then of course I would do it again, because it's a great joy to me. But if I'm working on the next film I'm doing is The Bourne Ultimatum, I can't make those kind of musical expressions because it would be completely out of sorts with the film.
Sure. I mean, it seems like the composers can only produce what's really asked of them, as simply as that sounds.
Yes, exactly. And you know, so I suppose what I'm saying is I'd love to work on more films like X-Men, but we'll see if that happens.
Now, if I could just ask you about doing the music for United 93, how somber, how daunting, how challenging of a project was that for you?
Well, I mean, I was speaking to Paul Greengrass last summer about a variety of things. At the time, he was working on his version of The Watchmen, which unfortunately didn't come off. And so we were talking about that. And when this came into play, he sent me a very early, I couldn't describe it as a script. It wasn't really scripted in any way, but it was very clearly defined on paper as to what he was trying to make. And from that point onwards, we talked a lot. They talked on regular intervals about what the music could do, what it should do, what it shouldn't do. And it actually, as the film was made, and then I started to get the first versions in, I mean, the hardest thing for me was to step in and start and decide that the film did need music. I wasn't convinced at first at all. I mean, Paul had to persuade me that he felt that music would help people, would help guide them through the film, was a little bit of hand-holding in a way, just to let them know that they're part of a story being told, and then that, you know, not to be so deep inside what you are seeing and the desperation of what you're seeing. And so we used music in that sense, you know, as kind of as a prayer or as a, you know, as a sort of a way of allowing people to, you know, relax a little. Even though it sounds as if it's about building the tension, I mean, the tension was already there. There's nothing, because it's a film that you know, it's a story you know the end of, and it's the most tragic end of storytelling anybody could ever make. There were other elements that Paul was trying to bring out, and so it was hard. It was very hard to start, but once I started and got over sort of working on some of these scenes, which were very hard to work on with the sound up. I mean, the last 10 minutes of the film are profoundly upsetting, and I found it, you know, after a while I couldn't really work with the picture and the sound running, and it was better to either turn the sound off or actually turn the whole film off and try and do it from timings. I understand what was needed, and it was just a question of making sure that it fit. And I think if I'd kept running it over and over and over too much, I think it was making it too difficult to sort of move forward, really.
Yeah, and you know, looking at the film as a whole, it seems like professionalism really soared through to the top, and everyone involved answered the call. It was a very difficult journey to capture on film.
Yeah, and I mean, Paul was quite extraordinary in the sense that I remember reading the first draft of this, of the paper he sort of wrote on it, and I remember thinking, this is the hardest thing, you know, this is going to be so easy to mess up, so easy, and I don't know how we're going to do this. And you know, I always likened it to, you know, he picked a very, very distant target, and he hit it straight in the middle. I mean, everything that he wanted to say in that movie, everything he wanted to people to take away from that movie, he achieved.
One thing I'm noticing about your career, you know, year to year, you're producing on a very high level with quite a few projects. How difficult logistically is your schedule in managing one project to the next?
Well, you know, if I look back on it, I'm not doing that many films a year, really. Some of them squish up a little bit. I mean, that's just the nature of working in Hollywood, is that schedules move. In the last few years, I've been working on 12 films, of which one ran for 4 years. And I was constantly sort of having to attend to Happy Feet. And the other ones really sort of all lay out pretty well. It's just a question for me of getting enough thinking time sometimes.
Yeah, because I always try to think of, when I see all these soundtracks being released, you know, how much time do composers have to really be just creative? Because it seems like the pressure is always on.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes you really are, you know, pushed for the amount of time. I mean, what's happening is, I think post-production periods are shortening because of the huge outlay in production. So if you've got a $100 million film and you've already put out $85 million worth of costs to make it before you even start editing, that period to get your money back between when you finish shooting and when you release the film and you get your money back that first weekend, you want to keep that as short as possible. So hence, in that period, everybody's being pushed, you know, everything from the editors, the visual effects people, the sound effects people, and of course the composer. So we're getting a lot less time, I think, than people ever did, and certainly I ever did when I was beginning. And I think the trick is to try and get on early enough, get into conversations, and use some time, even if you haven't got the movie complete or you haven't got the movie in any way, just to use some time to start mulling it over and start experimenting and playing, really. I mean, I always say that I divide my time into three parts, which is the first third, I just think and mess around. And then the second third, I actually sort of create some ideas. And then the last third is actually when I do the craft of actually scoring the movie. So however long I get, I often find myself appearing to waste the first third, which I don't think I am ultimately, but it's just the nature of the way I work. And then the second third is always a great pleasure, because that's the playtime, when you actually start making the music and start putting it up against picture and just experimenting. But you're not in the position where you have to get everything done at that point. You've still got enough time. And then obviously by the last third, that's when, you know, sort of the adrenaline kicks in. You suddenly realize, well, hang on, I've got some dates I have to hit. I have to get this stuff finished. And then you sit down and you actually really start to make what you've been playing with and thinking about for these other sections of time. You try and make it work.
And you had touched on the early days a bit, how there was more time to work and perhaps more time to collaborate. What can you say about your collaboration in the past with Harry Gregson-Williams, and would there ever be a situation where the two of you may connect again in the future?
Well, I hope so. Harry and I would, I love Harry, and I see him, and I would work with him any time. I mean, he's just a good writer. I mean, I think the reason that, you know, we don't work at the moment together is that, you know, it's really better for us to have two careers, and it's worked out very well for us to sort of, stay separate. Otherwise, we could have easily ended up sort of only being thought of as a team, and then at a certain point, you know, people just never take you seriously alone. So I think we did three films together, and three films I enjoyed very much, and were obviously, you know, very successful. And I would do it again, and I think Harry would as well, but I think it would have to be the time when we felt that it wouldn't, you know, impact sort of people's perception of us as writers, that perhaps when we really are so established that James Newton Howard, who are good friends. You know, they did the Batman film together. I mean, partly out of pragmatics, but also partly out of, I think, they just wanted to hang together and make some music together.
I personally would love to see a reunion tour, so to speak, between the two of you, because your scores were magic when the two of you got together. And in your own rights, you've established your own musical identities and voices, but the fan buzz is still out there for some of the earlier works between yourselves.
Well, yeah, and that's also, you know, the quality of film as well. I mean, Chicken Run was, working with the guys from Aardman's, you know, it's a fantastic experience. They were very inspirational. And when you're younger as well like that, you know, you're really hot to try and make it as you know, good as you possibly can. And, you know, I mean, I know that Harry feels that way about every film, and I certainly try and feel that about every film as well. And it's, you come across different films and you come across a different, experiment with the way you work and experiment with the sound you're making and what it is that you say. But obviously when it gives you a certain amount more time as well, because if the two of you can experiment over the same period of time, you're only dealing with half of the score ultimately. The workload reduces, but the playtime can expand, and I think that's the fun we had.
And I'm just curious if you ever got a sense of how popular one specific track from Chicken Run was, the Building the Crate track?
Yeah, people, when the film came out, that was the one that people kept saying to me, about, and it was a very last-minute cue, just sort of thrown in at the last minute. I think Harry was in London recording, and we just finishing off mixes for the first half of the film. I think we kind of did it in two parts, and we came back and we were getting very close to having to leave and get the rest of the movie done, and I think it just sort of popped out, that one.
Sometimes the best usually happens like that.
Yes.
Now, in closing, you mentioned that you're working on the next Bourne movie. Is there anything else that you may have in the pipeline that you'd like to share with us at this time?
Well, I'm starting work on sort of early recording for Horton Hears a Who, which is for Fox and Fox Animation with Blue Sky Studios, who did Ice Age, The Meltdown, and Robots. So I'm continuing to work with the same company and the same group of people. I mean, they're a wonderful company to work for, and they bought the rights to do Horton Hears the Who, and I really feel that this is going to be, a fantastic version of the Sue story, which is a great story in the first place. I used to read it to my son, and I've always loved the story. I think it's a profound sort of statement on, on society and everything. It sort of touches on all sorts of issues, everything from democracy to mental health, and I'm just sort of playing around with trying to make start the process. There's a few numbers, there's a few sections of the movie which the music has to be done first for it all to sort of coordinate. It's not like songs per se, but it's a musical world, and the climax of the movie, with everyone sort of trying to make on in Whoville trying to make sound. It's a musical scene. It's a huge musical scene, so we have to do it in advance so that we can animate to it.
Wow, that sounds like something that's very, very much that I would look forward to. Music within the context of the story is always welcome, especially when it's done by a composer like yourself.
Oh, thank you.
So,
well, that comes out in 2008, though, obviously, so I've got a little bit of time.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I want to thank you for taking the time out to speak with us.
No problem. Thanks very much.